All right, so we are 10 days into 2021. How exciting is that? Is your 2021 going a whole lot better than your 2020 did? What? Now, when we were still in 2020, people, I kept hearing everybody, oh, I'll be glad when 2020's done. Wait till 2020's done. Let's kick 2020 out and let's rip it up. Let's throw it away. And you're not excited. I don't get it. Actually, I kind of do get it. There's a lot of things still going on in the world. We're still wearing masks, or I'm not right now because I'm on camera and I'm speaking, but we're still restricted, and our world is still in turmoil, even maybe more turmoil than it was at 2020. I love kidding my children about this because they were excited about 2021 to start with, and I said, on January 1st, I woke up to stronger restrictions than I woke up to yesterday, right? Remember that? Anyway, we won't get in to all that. But as I've been talking to people already this year, one thing that I've observed is that people are not making plans. People are not setting goals. People are not getting ready to live out their dreams because they're afraid. They're afraid that it'll be, I made all those plans for what? Because they look at last year. Did you get everything done last year that you said you were going to do in January, all those resolutions? No, of course not. And now people are afraid to step into this year confidently because they're afraid of just wasting that time and being disappointed and their expectations not being met and all that. Is it just me or is anyone else feeling like that? All right, I see that hand. All right, yeah. Last week, we started a new series that kind of speaks into where we're at right now. We're calling it Rebuild, Rise from the Rubble. That's why we sang that song just now, Glorious Ruins, where we're asking God to bring those things, the ruins, back to life. We began looking at the nation of Israel, and the year was around 450 BC. 140 years before that, King Artaxerxes II had sieged Jerusalem and the nation of Israel, taken it over, and he'd actually decimated it. He had destroyed all the infrastructure and everything, and the temple had been rebuilt. The city had started getting rebuilt, but then Artaxerxes said, stop it, this new Artaxerxes, not the one that was 140 years ago, it said, stop rebuilding. You're not going to rebuild the city. The walls were in ruins and the city was left exposed. We talked about that last week. We picked up that story where Nehemiah's brother and some friends came to the palace where Nehemiah was serving the king and gave him the update. This is where things are. And it wasn't a pretty picture. Jerusalem's lying in ruins. The people are in ruins. There's a lot of rebuilding that needs to be done. So we saw in Nehemiah some characteristics of the kind of person God uses when he wants to accomplish something big. We saw Nehemiah could be used because, first of all, he was concerned. He was concerned enough to ask. He just asked, how's it going? And then he really listened. He was really interested. He was really concerned about the people who were talking to him. And then we saw that he acted with compassion. His concern led him to compassion. It says that he sat down and wept and he fasted, prayed, and all of that. But it stopped him in his daily routine. It made him pause. And we saw that he had character. He prayed. He confessed sin. He was committed to being a part of the solution. And he was actually had some competence about him. He used the way God had shaped him to actually be a part of the solution. And then we kind of wanted to leave you last week with, what is it that grips your heart? For Nehemiah, it was the city lying in ruins. It was the people. And it was actually God's name even that Nehemiah wanted to protect and restore. What is it that grips your heart? Is it the lost? Is it poverty? Is it modern day slavery or racism? Most of us would like to make some difference in the world that we live in. But could I suggest to you that most of us stop just short? Most of us will say, yes, I'm excited about that. I want to make a difference. I want to change this. I want to change that. And then we take one step and we find out life gets a little bit hard. So we talked about all of that last week. If you didn't hear that message, tune into the YouTube channel, go to the website. It was actually a conversation with Deanna and Justin and myself, and I just encourage you to look at that. By the way, this thing about making a difference in the world, just this is a side note, and I don't want to go on a political rant or anything here, but making a difference in the world does not look like what we've seen in the USA this week. Did you hear that? And I don't care where you land politically, I don't care who you would be for, and I know we're in Australia and everything, but there's a lot of interest in Australia. I'm surprised how much. But wherever you land, violence is never the answer if you want to make a difference in the world. They've gone about things the wrong way. And I've been really troubled and saddened over the last week that a lot of what has been going on there has been attached to evangelical Christianity and promoted that that is who is leading all of this kind of stuff. And that just really breaks my heart. That makes me sad. And may I say that that is not the whole picture of Christ followers. That is not an accurate reflection of those that are following Jesus. It's much different than that. So thanks for that little side note. What is that thing that grips your heart? And what are you doing about it? That's what we want to wrestle with this morning. I want to pick up the story again where we left off last week, Nehemiah chapter 2 and verse 1. It says, early the following spring, in the month of Nisan, during the 20th year of King Artaxerxes' reign. Wow! You see that? That's not exciting to you or troubling to you or anything. There's no emotion in your eyes. What's going on? You're not reading it the same way I am. You remember what month Nehemiah found out about the problems? Go back to Nehemiah chapter 1, verse 1. It's the month of Kislev. This is the month of Nisan. That's 4 months. What we see here is that Nehemiah had the courage to wait. Nehemiah had the courage to wait. 4 months had passed since he received the news. He waited 4 months to approach the king. And the reason I'm going, wow, is because when I read that, I think, what were you thinking? There's a problem. Go fix it now. I think in this crowd, if I see a problem and I want to go fix it, I might be alone. Is that right? No. Rob would be with me. He waited 4 months. What was happening during that 4 months? Nehemiah was praying. Nehemiah was fasting. Nehemiah was planning. We're going to see here in just a couple of minutes. But friends, I don't know about you, but I do know about me. Waiting can be challenging. Waiting can be challenging. In my early days of ministry, my response when I would see something that needed to be done would be to just rush ahead and try to fix it right away. Just let's go get it done. As those around me, close to me now know, I'm not like that anymore. I'm relaxed and chilled most of the time. Yeah. I aspire to be. I'm striving to be. Remember that statement? Yeah. I remember days where I would think things need to get done. One of the ones that just floods back to my mind right now is I had our youth leaders on a retreat, and we were at a conference and things, and we were supposed to have a planning meeting while we were there. All right, and the day had gone on long. The conference sessions were too long or something, or we started talking to people for too long, and it was midnight. And I said, okay, guys, it's time to have the planning meeting. Yeah, I've never done that again since then. Because more than once I found out that this rushing in and trying to fix things can often be dangerous. When you have a bit of information, just a little bit, and a whole lot of assumptions, and you rush in and try to fix stuff, it doesn't always go well. You start developing a plan, you want to execute it, but many times, at least in my experience, we haven't taken the time to properly assess things, properly even engage with God about this thing, because we know the answers, we know the solution. Nehemiah wasn't like that. Sometimes we just want to jump in and fix things, but sometimes there are things that only God can do. And this was the situation with Nehemiah. If he had rushed out to try to fix it, it would not have happened. God's taught me over the years, there are times I have to wait, and that takes courage. That takes faith. Because if I can fix something, if I can control that, I don't need faith. I can do that. It takes courage to wait because it might not happen the way I thought it should. Exodus chapter 14, verse 13 says, "Stand still and see the salvation of the Lord." That verse comes at a place where the children of Israel are leaving Egypt. Remember that series from last year, Get Us Out of Here? They're at the sea, they're at the ocean, the Red Sea, mountains to the right, mountains to the left, Egyptian army behind them. When I see that problem, I'm going to start strategizing. I'm going to start planning. I'm going to figure out, do we go through the sea or do we go through the people or do we go over the mountains? And I'm going to get probably four different teams and we're going to try all four things, all right? But God told Moses, tell the people, stand still and see the salvation of the Lord. Psalm chapter 46, 10 says, be still and know that I am God. Is anybody good at this stuff? I don't see one hand in the joint. Your hands are up at your houses, right? Because you can wait. In the waiting, you know what's happening? God is preparing both you and your circumstances. He's getting you ready. He's getting your circumstances ready to fulfill his purpose. See, just because you think you're ready for action, your circumstances might not be. You might be wanting to do the right thing, but it might not be the right time. Warren Wiersbe, speaking to this passage, said this, true faith in God brings a calmness to the heart that keeps us from rushing about and trying to do in our own strength what only God can do. We must know not only how to weep and pray, but also how to wait and pray. I think we could all learn a lot from Nehemiah waiting, the courage to wait. Now we need to be careful here not to confuse the courage to wait with complacency, okay? Don't take what I just said about waiting and run out of here and say, oh, I'm just waiting forever, you know, and you never do anything. That's complacency. You wait when you're trying to hear from God, when you want to see God move. You don't wait because you're afraid. You don't wait because you don't care and because you're lazy and all of that. You wait when God says wait. Now, if this were a movie that we were watching, we just learned that there's been 4 months' time here this past. So the plot would be developing. The character would be being set up. We would be seeing Nehemiah fasting and praying during that time. We would see him sad. We would see him going about his daily job and sucking it up and doing that while he's still processing all of this and asking God to intervene. So that's where we're at. And then in verse 1, it says this, I was serving the king his wine. I had never before appeared sad in his presence. So the king asked me, why are you looking so sad? You don't look sick to me. You must be deeply troubled. Okay, so we're watching this movie and the drama is building. We've seen him waiting. We've seen him preparing himself for this. And he goes in. He hasn't looked sad before, but today he couldn't hold it back anymore. He's in the king's presence, and he's ready to have a breakdown because this is weighing so heavy on him. It had wrecked him. Our hearts are racing while we're watching this drama unfold. What's going to happen? We see, oh, this is not going to go well because Nehemiah is doing something he didn't do before. Hold on to that. We're going to come back to that in a few minutes. But it would have been expected that the joy of being in the king's presence would bring a smile to everyone's face. Staff, take note of that, please. But Nehemiah was sad. A natural response from Artaxerxes that day would be to banish Nehemiah from his presence, to punish him, and very possibly even have him killed for being sad in his presence. That's what Nehemiah was coming into and facing. That's what's going through his mind right there. And then he says this. He says, "Then I was terrified." Yeah, that makes sense, doesn't it? "I replied, 'Long live the king. How can I not be sad? For the city where my ancestors are buried is in ruins, and the gates have been destroyed by fire.'" Looking here at Nehemiah's courage, he had the courage to wait. Now he's got the courage to be real. He had the courage to be real. He's vulnerable. He's real. No masks, pun intended. No facades. Notice Nehemiah, he's respecting authority there. He says, "Long live the king." So he greets the king and says, "Hey, I respect you. I honor you. I hope you live a long time. I hope you rule a long time." Because he knew it was a risk to be sad in the king's presence. He knew that he was taking his life into his hands. But he made a decision. "I'm going to take that risk. I'm not going to hide it." The situation had gripped his heart. It had wrecked him. And he couldn't hold it back anymore. He didn't just pretend everything was fine. If you asked Nehemiah, "Are you okay?" He wouldn't just pretend. He wouldn't say, "Yeah, everything's fine." You ever talk to people like that? We all do that. We say, "Hey, how you doing?" Somebody will say, "Okay." And I love saying right back to them. In fact, most of the time, even if I think they are okay, I'll say, "No, you're not." And what I find out is most of the time I'm right. Even if they said they were okay, most people aren't always okay. But have you ever talked to someone and you can see that maybe they're a little troubled and you ask, "Are you okay?" And they just melt right there. They just break down. Anybody ever done that? My hand's up. I hate that. I want the poker face. I want to be strong. But sometimes we just break down. You know, being sad is not a sign of weakness. Being sad is not a sign of weakness. It takes courage to let people know that you are struggling. It takes courage to let people know that. You got to risk something there. Nehemiah also showed he had the courage to be real, because not only did he show that he was sad, but he admitted he was scared. He said, "I'm terrified." Nehemiah was absolutely afraid. He was risking his life. And imagine the emotions. He's sad. He's overwhelmingly sad, depressed probably. And he is afraid. He's shaking in his boots and he's getting ready to respond. He says, "I was terrified." For most people, that's where it would stop. All the sadness, all the fear would say, "Okay, this is just too hard. I need to just walk away." Fear paralyzes, but faith energizes. Nehemiah had spent 4 months. His faith was being built during that 4 months when he was praying and fasting and asking God to intervene. He had the courage, he had the faith to be real. And as a result, you know, we're watching this drama and we're expecting the king to come to blast him. And instead, the king says, "What's troubling you?" There's an opportunity opens up here because Nehemiah had the courage to wait. Then he had the courage to be real. He appeals to the king on a deeply personal level. He says, "Why wouldn't I be sad?" He draws the king into that before he asked for what he wanted. He says, "Why wouldn't I be sad? You understand this, king?" And the king answered. He's emotionally involved now, and he says, "Well, how can I help you?" Wow, that's a plot twist. That's a huge plot twist. It was a clear and direct answer to Nehemiah's prayer. God saying, "The time is now. That thing that you've been praying for 4 months, that you've been waiting for me to do, the time is right now." If I was Nehemiah, I'm sad, I'm terrified, and now the opportunity's here. I know this is it. I know it's time to take that step. Oh, my heart would have been racing, thinking, "Wow, do I do it?" And I probably got even more afraid because now the king is inviting me into that space. Again, the movie drama that we're looking at, it's unexpected. We're on the edge of our seats waiting for his response. And it says this, "With a prayer to the God of heaven, I replied, 'If it please the king, and if you are pleased with me, your servant, send me to Judah to rebuild the city where my ancestors are buried.'" Nehemiah had the courage to make a big ask. He had the courage to make a big ask. It wasn't a small thing he was asking for here. He's got this invitation from the king. The right thing at the right time is now. And you notice in that verse, he's leaning into the relationship. He said, if it please the king, if you are pleased with me, your servant. Nehemiah here is saying, hey, you know me. We have a relationship. I've been serving you a long time. You know my character. You know my integrity. We have a relationship. And I'm going to actually lean into that right now, and I'm going to borrow from that. You know who I am, and I want to ask you something here. So then it says, with a prayer to the God of heaven. That was a quick SOS prayer. That wasn't a, okay, king, hang on. I got to go have a prayer meeting, get my 14 friends, and let's seek God about this. He's already been seeking God about this. He knows in the moment, okay, the king said, how can I help? Hey, God, help me. That's the prayer. And it was probably silent, or maybe he's muttered it, and the king says, what was it? Anyway, so the king, or Nehemiah asked God to help him. This is the same king that stopped the rebuilding of Jerusalem. Okay, think about that. This king has said before, stop it. I don't want that city rebuilt. I don't want walls built up around it because that's going to be bad news. No, I will not let that happen. It's a bold request asking the king to reverse his order. But Nehemiah was ready with an answer when he asked, how can I help? Nehemiah had been planning. He was waiting for this day. He didn't ignore it. He accepted the help. You know, how do we usually respond when someone offers help to us? Nah, it's okay. I got it. Nobody can do anything anyway. Generally, that's how we respond. Usually because we're too proud to receive help. If someone asks you if they're okay, if you're brave enough to be real, if you have that courage, and then they say, how can I help? Let them know. Let them know your grass needs mowed. Or your car needs washed, or you need meals, or whatever it might be. Let them know you need a friend. Let them know you need someone to pray for you and with you. Let them know. Nehemiah says, send me to Judah so I can rebuild the city and the walls. And the king granted him permission. The king said, okay. And the queen was sitting beside him. It says in verse 6. Then look at verse 7. It says, I also said to the king, if it please the king, let me have letters addressed to the governors of the province west of the Euphrates River, instructing them to let me travel safely through their territories on my way to Judah. As I read that, and I cannot look past our state borders right now, he's saying, give me a permit, you know, so that I can get through. He says, thanks for the permission. That's what Nehemiah said. Thanks for the permission you just granted me to go. And since you seem to be in such a generous mood, can I ask you to give me a permit to travel between these areas? Can you provide me some protection so that I can get safely through? And then, okay, we're not done yet. Nehemiah verse 8 says, please give me a letter addressed to Asaph. This is beautiful. The manager of the king's forest, instructing him to give me timber. I will need it to make beams for the gates of the temple fortress, for the city walls. Oh, and by the way, and for a house for myself. Wow. How courageous is this guy right now? He's been sad. He's been afraid. And he's asking for the whole farm right now. He says, well, thanks, King Artaxerxes. Thanks for the permission. Thanks for the protection. Oh, by the way, can you pay for the wall? Yeah? Can you tell the king's forest ranger to give me all the materials I need to make this happen? And I want a house, too, out of all this deal, because it's going to take a while, and I'm going to need a place to live. It says, and the king granted these requests because of the gracious hand of God was on me. Because the gracious hand of God was on me. Finally, Nehemiah had the courage to give God the credit. Nehemiah has just had a huge day. In a leader's life, this is the day that you look back and you just go, whoa! It all came together. All these things happened. Woo! Look at my leadership. Look what I did. That wasn't Nehemiah's response. And in writing his memoirs, he's right. This says this is the memoirs of Nehemiah. He didn't write this and say, here's my 7-step plan for success for you to get things done. Nehemiah said, the king granted these requests because I was such an amazing leader. No, he said, the king granted these requests because of God's gracious hand on me. He deflected all the credit to God. He knew where it came from. If you continue reading that passage, you'll see God gave him even more than he asked for. They sent a cavalry with Nehemiah. All of these courageous steps that Nehemiah took were taken because Nehemiah said, there's a problem, and it's not okay. We can do better. I want to make a difference. Things need to change here. And if we want things to be different, you and I need to take a page or two out of Nehemiah's book. Back to the question that we've been wrestling with. What is that thing that grips your heart? What is it? Is it something local here? Is it something overseas? I just looked over and I saw Jackie getting ready to go back to Thailand. Something gripped her heart several years ago. And I think it's still there a little bit. Jackie did something about what was gripping her heart. Nehemiah did something about what gripped his heart. Many of you have done something about what grips your heart. But some of you haven't. Some of you say, oh yeah, that something's happening here, but oh, I can't do anything about it. It's just too hard. Question today, do you have a courage to make a difference? And maybe you need courage to wait like Nehemiah did. Maybe you need the courage to be real and to be honest. Maybe you need the courage to ask big. Maybe you need courage to give God the credit and stop taking so much credit yourself. But to see things different, we need the courage to take a step of faith. To see things different in our world, you need to take some risk. There are people today, people in this room and people that are listening online, watching online, you need to do what Nehemiah did and do something different than you had done before. He said, I had never been sad in the king's presence. It was a day he did something different than what he'd done before, and the result was different. You need to change something today. Some of you need to take a step today and do something different than what you've done before. It's been said many times that you can't keep doing the same things the same way and expect a different result. That's the definition of insanity. You want to make a difference in the world, do something different than you did yesterday. Do something different than you've done so far today. What courageous steps do you need to take today to make a difference? What do you need to risk? And finally, what will you do differently to make a difference in this world? Father, thank you for Nehemiah's example, for his courage. Thank you for teaching us that waiting takes courage. Being real, being honest takes courage. Clearly, asking for big things takes courage. And Lord, it takes courage to give you the credit when you do something amazing. Thank you for all you've done. Lord, help us now to be willing to step out. Help us now to be willing to do things differently so that we can see a difference being made. Lord, we love you. Thank you for loving us. And Lord, give us the courage to step out of this place, making things different. In Jesus' name, amen.